Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to ScaryCast. This is Dr. John along with Devin Tate, and we're going to have a great show for you tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun and a lot of great things happening. First of all, I want to remind everyone that coming up on August the 25th, that's August the 25th, we have nothing else other than the Cape Fear Comic Con in Wilmington, North Carolina, headlined by Papa Stro, the maestro of wrestling. We've got a lot of great guests. We're going to have a lot of fun there at the Coastline Conference Center in downtown Wilmington, North Carolina. So do not miss this one. The Cape Fear Comic Con, Saturday, August the 25th in Wilmington, North Carolina. For more information and or to buy tickets, just go to www.capefearcomiccon.com. That's two C's in there or one. Either way, it won't matter. But, yeah, please be sure to join us. It'll be a lot of fun coming up in, I believe, 9 days or so. So don't miss that one. Also, do not miss the Charlotte CryptoCon, which has been moved to October the 6th. We'll have a lot of great guests on there. On the 7th, Matthew Delf is going to be leading a Bigfoot expedition, and that's going to be going to, of all places, Cleveland County to check out for the Bigfoot that has been sighted many times up there. It's named Nobby because it's on the Cleveland Knob. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Be sure to join us for that. That's con.com. Check that one out for October the 6th. Anyway, tonight it's me and it's Devin Tate from Hollywood. Devin, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. It's really hot here in L.A.
It's always hot in L.A. because you got great things happening, but you're saying the temperature is hot?
The temperature is hot, and we have rare humidity here. It's really humid and sticky, kind of probably like it is down in the south.
Yeah, I tell you what, it is hot and sticky down here, but we're just glad to be around, and everything's really good. So now you had an interesting evening so far out there in L.A. What you sent me a picture, and thank you very much. What were you doing tonight?
Yeah, sure. So tonight my friend Gretchen Bonaducci was playing with her band. She has an 80s cover band called the Fatal 80s, and they were playing down at the original Farmers Market in L.A. and kind of celebrating the release of her book, which came out this week. It's a memoir about her marriage to Danny Bonaducci from the Partridge Family.
Well, that sounds like something worth reading. Have you got any insights or any news about that that you could share with us that wouldn't spoil purchasing the book?
You know, I haven't. I just got my copy on Tuesday night. She had a book release party down in downtown L.A. at a record store called Pop Obscure Records. So I just got my copy of the book, and I have not started reading it yet, but it has a great intro by Adrian Curry, who's a model and another reality television star. You may know that Gretchen and Danny had a reality show on VH1 back in the early 2000s. So the book kind of focuses on that period of her life during the reality show and afterwards leading up to her divorce.
Wow, that does sound interesting. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff in there. There are a lot of books that have come out recently. We all know Omarosa has got her book Unhinged out about Donald Trump, and there's lots of stuff in there. Can't attest to the actual truth of all that, but I know there are a lot of tell-all books coming out, and so just goes to show you better be a nice person or somebody might tell, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I look forward to I'll get a copy of it on Amazon, and hopefully you can get her to autograph that one for me. So that'll be a lot of fun. Look forward to reading that and find out really what happened about getting put under the Partridge Family bus. That was a great subtitle. It really was.
Yeah, it's really funny. She's got a great sense of humor, and she's a really genuine, very interesting person. And I really know her as a musician. She's been playing all around L.A. for years, so I really knew her through that. And then I found out more about her, you know, the reality show and her marriage to Danny. And I was a fan of Danny back when he was on the radio here on Star 98.7 when I first moved to LA, so it's kind of a full circle thing for me.
Gotcha. Well, as I said, we'll certainly take a look at that. Thanks for the picture you sent. We'll see if we can't get that one up on Facebook tomorrow so everyone can enjoy that. So anyway, we got a bang-up show tonight. I was talking with Devin this afternoon, and he said, well, what are we going to talk about tonight? I said, well, and I had just been to visit my friend Susie in Georgetown, South Carolina, and I mentioned to her that all over Fox News, which is where I get my daily headlines and everything, all over Fox News was the word about the Catholic Church and the massive problems that they had in Pennsylvania that had just been reported, really, and it was pretty astonishing, all the problems that they have had with members of the clergy and the youth down there, and I think that's about all I'll care to say, but we know what the issue is. And the first thing I said to Susie was, you know, it looks like that prophecy of St. Malachi might be more correct than people would think. And she said, well, now, why did you mention that, John? Did you see the special? I think she said it was on, Discovery or A&E. I'm not sure which. I said, no, I didn't. But, I mean, I've dealt with the paranormal for a long, long time. And in fact, I used to have a website about St. Malachi, the Irish priest who predicted the lineage of all of the popes up through the last one, which he claimed would be Pope Peter, and would take reign right in and around where Pope Francis did. And I said, you know, if there continue to be problems to this extent, who knows what might actually happen to the actual corporate nonprofit entity of the Catholic Church if things like this come out in all 50 states. I'm not sure what the reaction will be. And Devin, I know you you said, yeah, you thought this would be an interesting topic to talk about. And I know you've done a little bit of research. And what have you come up with? What do you think about this?
Yeah, so I mean, I am, you know, I do not know a lot about the Catholic Church or about the prophecy of St. Malachi, but just in reading it, you know, it is pretty eerie how, you know, this was written a long, long time ago, I believe in the 1100s maybe, and it does seem to oddly predict a lot of the popes that have been here throughout history, and it does end with the current pope right now. So with all the problems happening in the Catholic Church now and in really the last, you know, few years, it is kind of disconcerting and alarming.
What I think that really says is that can see the future. And I just can't see that that's really such a tough thing for people to grasp. I mean, we all have a certain degree of intuition. Let me ask you this question. Has there been a time in the last month when you have just known something was going to happen or had happened, and then you found out that that was true and you had no way of knowing? Has that happened to you in the last month?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, I totally believe there's all these different kind of windows and portals into different, you know, dimensions and realities and forward and backward. So, and I think what, you know, people kind of get hung up on is obviously it's not an exact science. You know, you might get a glimpse of something, then maybe in that second you see a little bit of the picture and, you know, maybe you have an impression of it, but you can't exactly know all of it. But you come away with some of it. So I think a lot of people get hung up on the details and was it all exact or, you know, is this a fraud? But, you know, the reality is there's been tons of people in times through history where this has been displayed and, you know, demonstrated where people have been able to have these insights or these visions into, you know, future times or even past times or even other dimensions.
That's, you know, I certainly agree with you there. I mean, I've spoken with a number of professional psychics, and they say, you know, when you get a glimpse of something, there is a certain degree of interpretation that has to take place based on what you've seen and how it relates to the upcoming reality. You know, and that's what a lot of people want to discount, is if something gets reported and it's not quite right, but if it's tangential, even, you know, if you see or feel something that is somehow related, that is certainly evidence that there's some type of precognition going on, that you're grabbing a hold of a timeline that's yet to happen or whatever. So people need to realize and don't just laugh that off, because, you know, I know that, and I'll share a personal story with you. It was a Friday night, and it was about, oh, I don't know, it was about 24 years ago. My mother called me. I always called her. My father had passed away, and I always called her a couple times a day to see how she was doing. I lived an hour away and wanted to make sure she was all right. And I'd already spoken with her that evening, about 7:30. And I got a phone call at 9 o'clock that night from her. I said, "Are you all right?" She said, "Yeah, I'm fine. Are you happy with what you're doing?" I said, "Well, yes, ma'am, I am. I mean, I was in commercial real estate development at the time. And not only that, but I was pursuing my doctorate in information systems." She said, "Well, you know, I had a dream, and I never told you about it, that you got a job with IBM, but you weren't happy with it. And that might not be what you need to do." And that was something that came from a very straight-laced, very practical lady. And it was mm-hmm. so strange that she would call me. That's something, I guess, I don't know about parents today or recently, but I know my parents, we never really talked about the future in terms of, well, what will make you happy? I think that's been more of a thing that's happened in the last 10, 15 years. But I know back in the early 90s, that was never the case. It was like, well, you know, what are you going to do the best in? What are you going to be the most successful in? There was no real notion of, will you be happy? And that was a very, very strange comment for her to make. I mean, she was a wonderful lady, but that was never the approach that either one of my parents took. And I let her know that I was happy with what I was doing, and we'd see what happened. I didn't know what else to say. So I hung up, and then 5 minutes later, she called back, and that was very unusual. And she said, "I just wanted you to know that I love you, and I want you to be happy." Now, and I knew something had to be wrong, and I called my next-door neighbor. She said, "Well, no, your mom's fine. She was out in the yard today with your next-door neighbor's grandson, and he was hanging out with her while she was doing some yard work," and that was very typical of her. But something was absolutely not right with my mother. And she sounded great, great spirits and everything, but she said things she had never said to me before. I called her the next morning. She was doing just fine. And about 1 p.m., I said, something's wrong. I don't know what it is. I even said, I've got a business trip. I've got to fly out to Wilmington, Delaware later today. Do you want me to come home and visit with you?" I said, "I'll put that off. I don't care what they say at work." She said, "No, I'll be fine. You just go do a good job." And sure enough, 1 o'clock p.m., when I was gathering my things together to go to the plane, I got a phone call from the next-door neighbor, said the ambulance had taken my mother out, and she had an aneurysm and passed away the next morning at Baptist Hospital up there where I was in Winston-Salem. And, you know, a sudden and very strange set of actions from someone that you've known all your life is an indication that they know something. They may not know what it is, or they may be putting together their last thoughts and want you to know how they fall.
Mm-hmm.
It was very strange, and I remember that as much as if it just happened yesterday. She knew she was going. She knew. She didn't want to discuss it with me. She didn't want me to come home. She knew it was her time. And I know Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet from Virginia Beach, he told of the time when he was in a department store, and he was going to go into the elevator go up to the top floor of the building. And the elevator door opened, and he looked. It appeared to him as though everybody was looking pale, ghostly, and dead. And he got afraid. He backed off. He said, no, I've got to do something else. The elevator door closed, and it wasn't but a matter of seconds that that elevator dropped four floors, and everyone on the elevator was killed.
Oh, wow.
So there are many, many times, I mean, you know, what he saw, he didn't see the elevator crash. He didn't see it drop. But he saw the lifeless-looking faces of those people. So, I mean, you know, that's what psychics go through. They don't see the exactation of what's getting ready to happen. So, I mean, do you have a story like that that you would care to share? And I know we didn't talk about this, like, you know, we're going to share stories, but it just seems like it might be an interesting thing. Have you ever seen or felt something that was just not right, and immediately there was an unpredictable result, and you could tie it to what you had seen, heard, felt, or thought?
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of any specific right now, but I know that has happened before. And the way that I think about it is, you know, the human brain is more advanced and complex than any piece of machinery that a human has built, right? So even like, an iPhone or a computer, it still can't match the capacity of a human brain. So if humans have created these devices like cell phones or radio towers that can send signals out and can be received, so, you know, obviously I think that the human brain is capable of doing that too. So there's all types of psychic energy that human brains put out, and human brains can receive them too. So there's a lot of, especially I think it's really more noticeable, they say, when people are twin siblings or even just really close siblings, and then even family members often have this kind of psychic connection. But I think there's a lot of psychic energy out there that anybody could pick up on if they're just kind of attuned into it.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about being in tune with family members. I will share one more story that happened with my mother after she had that aneurysm, if you don't mind. My aunt and uncle, who cared very much for me, we were at the hospital in Winston-Salem, and they said, listen, we need to go get a bite to eat. Your mother's got the best care in the world here at North Carolina Baptist Hospital. And she certainly did. I said, well, I think that'll be fine. I think she'll understand. So we went out to eat at a favorite restaurant of ours. And I'll never forget, it was 8:45. And we just had our salads, and we were waiting for our main course. And I felt an electrical shock run through my body. I mean, and it was a heavy shock. And I knew that at that moment my mother had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say anything to my aunt and my uncle. They were far too practical to want to hear anything about that. But I remember going back into the hospital, and I knocked on the door to ICU where my mother was. And the nurse came out, and she said, Mr. Sammy, I said, my mother passed away about 8:45, didn't she? She said, how did you know? I said, I just did.
Wow.
I knew it. It was a total shock. I mean, being her son and being connected to her the way I was, it was amazing the shock that I felt. I'll never forget it. I've got a similar story about my father. So I've been mm-hmm. fortunate enough have those experiences to make them more personal and the things that I'll always remember. But and another thing, and you know, this is off topic. This is not St. Malachi, the Catholic Church, or whatever. But I mean, I think it's a great thing to talk about a little bit. I always wanted to be able to have these experiences, and I never really did until one day I had an interesting idea that I would start trying to guess the time before I looked at my watch. Back when we had watches.
Mm-hmm.
You remember watches? Do you remember those things called watches, Devin?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I would start guessing, and I was all over the map. But after 20 years of guessing the time, I've gotten to the point that I guess the time and I know I'm within a minute, and I just go with that. And it just takes practice, just basically listening and trusting what you hear. So I've gotten to where I can guess time before I can see it. And that's a good way if people want to develop some type of perception that we don't associate with the five senses. Now, I don't say develop ESP or whatever. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about to develop an attunement to the world that does not come from seeing, listening, touching, tasting, or smelling. And there are lots of other senses, and one is the ability for our brain to sense or understand what's going on. So anyway, that's kind of how I did that. That happened after my mother passed away. I had this idea and I acted on it, and it's something that it's served me well. It also helps in your evaluation of people, as long as you really learn to trust your instincts and trust what you think. And the more you learn to trust, the better the signals will be, I believe. So that's just a little by the by. And, it's not like, when you get a feeling about something, it's not that you always, that you're always, it's always going to be exactly perfect. And that's with the St. Malachi predictions, I'll read this. It's all right with you, Devin. I'm going to read what has been said about this current pope. It said, Peter the Roman, who will pasture his sheep in many tribulations, and then when those things are finished, the city of seven hills, which is Rome, and the dreadful judge will come to judge his people. The end. And that's what is the 112th pope. What did we have with our previous pope, who was the wonderful pope from Poland? Said, in the final persecution of the Holy Roman Church, There he will sit. Basically, he will sit and watch. So we have some very, very interesting prophecies. The end. Well, now, does that mean the end of the world, or does that mean the end of civilization, or does that mean the end of the Catholic Church? Well, I hope it's not the end of the earth. I hope it's not the end of civilization as we know it, but it's the end of something major. Maybe it's the end of part of the church in the United States, who knows? But the end is the end, and the end can mean many things. So I think, I think St. Malachi's predictions, they started, as I scroll back in our browsers, who are listening, enjoying this with us, we can check back for one of the more recent popes who was Pope for a very short time, Pope John Paul I. He was the Pope of the Half Moon. That's what St. Malachi said. He was a very, he lasted, I think, about a month. And there was some scuttle around that he did not exactly die of his own accord in his sleep, but something happened, and he was, as we say, they say in New York, he was out of here in a month. And so apparently St. Malachi saw that. So I think these prophecies are interesting. And so I think the more we read, we need to realize that prophecies are not exactly perfect. They are sometimes symbolic in nature. But they're very real. People do see things. I think it's amazing from what I read, the book of John was written 100 years after the death of Christ. The best story that I've found, it was written over 100 years after the death of Christ. And it has some very, very accurate, as we have found out to be, very accurate stories and testimonies about the life of Jesus, that this prophet really could not have known. If If you think about it, we have a hard enough time. We've got newspapers to look at in the year 1918. And in the year 2018, we can at least see a record of many things that happened. But back in those days, they certainly did not have anything but oral tradition. And so it's just amazing what these prophets, or they'd call them the saints now. I mean, it's amazing what they could discern that was not written down. We just, we didn't have newspapers back then. So we're very fortunate mm-hmm. that we have newspapers going back to what, Ben Franklin and a little bit beyond, because, Franklin was the first person that did this. So it's amazing what the oral traditions kept around, and then these things were finally written down. So what else? Did you see anything else that was of interest to you when you looked through the prophecies of St. Malachi?
Just to put on the skeptic's hat a little bit, there was a couple of theories that I just wanted to get your take on, because one of them was that at the time that the prophecies were made public, there was a, I don't know if you call him a priest or somebody that was kind of gunning for the position of pope. And the next pope, the prediction, kind of seemed to match who that person was, although that person did not end up being pope. So some people discount it based on that. And then there's another thing where right before the final prediction, there's like one little line of text. And so some people have taken it to mean that he kind of skipped, and said after number, 110, there might be, a few more, and then there's going to be the last one. So some people have said that the last one is not necessarily the current pope. So I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Well, first of all, did the person who felt like he was predicted to become pope not become pope? Well, again, there are many people that have similar attributes, interests, and just because he was a lot like someone else who became pope doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with those predictions. That was one mortal making his interpretation. So that's all that's all I can say about that. Now, in terms of, is that line, that extra line, it might be, and I had not heard about that, but that might very well be the case. Don't know. But I think that's very interesting. I hadn't heard about that. I'll take a look at that and see. But it might be that there are some there's some build up to the last pope, and I think St. Malachi was occasionally very specific about names or whatever. So because we don't have Pope Peter, because I don't think we've had Pope Peter in a long, long time. So that might be, it might make us all feel better, because I think from what I understand about the Christian faith is that we as mortals are not supposed to know when the end of days is going to come. I mean, I think there's a passage in the Bible, I'm 100% sure there's a passage in the Bible that says, while on earth, concentrate on earthly things. And I don't believe that we're ever given by the Bible, for sure, if not other prophets, we are really not given an exact blueprint of when everything's going to end. I mean, that would kind of take the fun out of it. Now, Devin, wouldn't that kind of take the fun out of everything if we knew that in 2041 it was going to be all over? Wouldn't the world change drastically?
For sure. And wasn't there a lot of people predicting that 2012 was going to be the end, I believe? I seem to remember that. That was a lot of people talking.
There have been people that have predicted the end of the earth every year since the dawn of time. Everybody wants to say, it's going to come to an end. The one thing I'm certain about the end of the earth is that we don't know. I'm 100% certain of that. And I'm not trying to, I'm not trying to be flippant about it. But we absolutely don't know, and that's not our job to know when the end of the earth is going to happen. I mean, in the last 10 years, we've had two near brushes
One was a near brush with a coronal mass ejection, and then the other one was, I mean, it was a huge asteroid that hit Greenland. Good Lord, if that thing had hit, maybe 50 miles another way, that would have sent a tsunami that would have absolutely destroyed everything along the Atlantic Ocean. That would have been the end of everything. That would have ultimately been the end of everything. So, I mean, just in the last reasonable amount of time, we've had two near-death experiences. And I sure didn't hear any psychics talking about that asteroid that hit Greenland. Because, gosh, if it had hit in the Atlantic Ocean, New York would have been inundated. And it wouldn't have taken more than an hour or two for that tsunami to have just destroyed the whole town. You destroy New York, you destroy the nerve center of half of the earth. So, I mean, that's what I think. I think we're not allowed. And can I digress just a minute, please?
Yeah.
Okay, because I've got an important thing I'd like to talk about when it has to do with knowing what's going to happen. I was very fortunate to be introduced to the work of Dr. Ronald Bryan. He's Emeritus Professor of Physics at Texas A&M. And he knew Joe McMonagle. Joe was one of the psychics that was involved in the remote viewing / Stargate project when they hired people that claimed to be great in remote viewing to look over into the actions of what's going on. This is the feds. One branch, the project was called Stargate. They hired psychics to look across enemy lines and see what was going to happen. After a number of years, they said, well, they're not doing a very good job. We're not going to continue funding this. Well, that was obviously not the case. And from some of my research, I know that that is absolutely not the case. But anyway, Joe McMonagle, who I had breakfast with one morning, thanks to Sally Ryan Feather, whose father was J.B. Ryan, and he started the Ryan Institute of Parapsychology that has become the Ryan Research Institute in Durham. He said, John, you would really like the work of Dr. Ronald Bryan. He did some experiments with me, and I believe that you would find them completely fascinating. Now, I'll tell you what I'll do, Devin. I will, after our show tonight, I will put links up to, I have a short interpretive article about Dr. Bryan's fairly large scholarly work about this. I'll put those up on Scarycast, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
And I'm asking you, in case people don't know the secret, we are now co-hosts of Scarycast.
Yes.
So I now ask you, I have the luxury of having a friend and partner that I can ask their opinion and I can get an answer, and I don't have to just rely on my own, which is great. So anyway, what happened is Dr. Bryan, he did some remote viewing experiments with Joe McMonagle. He put questions inside of envelopes. He had three of them, and it was up to Joe McMonagle to figure out what the question was and what the answer was. That's pretty tough when you have the question in the envelope and it's sealed before you get to the man's house. Well, prior to this, there was a radio telescope that was built out in Utah, and in 1991, this radio telescope recorded a particle moving through the atmosphere much faster than the speed of light. It's hard to believe that, because we are taught in our very simplistic high school physics or chemistry that the speed of light is the boundary of speed, but it's not. And Dr. Bryan put together a scenario of what would the universe look like if there really were faster than light particles. And here's what he came up with. We have our Earth with our six or seven dimensions, the dimensions of sense and then the dimension of time and maybe a couple of others. But then he said there must be higher dimensions. And when I read that, I said, when I read about near-death experiences, and Devin, you probably heard of this too, people talk about going to the light, You've heard that phrase, haven't you?
Oh, sure.
And Eben Alexander, the fourth, Ben Alexander, talks about that when he had his near-death experience, seven, 8 years ago, and he wrote his bestseller about, going to a place he would call heaven. Well, Dr. Brian thought that, well, if there are higher dimensions, go when we die. And, there are many religions that say we don't die at all. All we do is we basically drop the body we're in and just continue on in our journey. Now, Mayor Baba, who is the Indian holy man, who actually has a spiritual center here in Myrtle Beach. Now, that's a real hoot. The Mayor Spiritual Center is in Myrtle Beach. I mean, it's, we've got everything. We've got a spiritual center. And what he says is we drop our body and continue on to our journey. So what I surmised when Dr. Brian phrased it the way he did was that going to the light, don't everybody get mad at me, must be going to a wormhole to higher dimensions. And that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to go to different dimensions, we're going to go to a higher dimension where we don't have any contact. And that's where the phrase in the Bible, while on earth, dwell on earthly things, because we're not going to get a glimpse of what happens when we get there. And, I of course, believe the soul is eternal. I think the brilliance of the soul is not something that is going to dissipate and just be obliterated when we die. I think that's a pretty presumptuous thing to say. So,
yeah.
The fact is, after reading Ron Brian's articles, I said, well, obviously, there are people who don't want to go to the light. They're afraid. They're afraid to be judged, or whatever it is. We don't know, and they stay here, and that's where we get ghosts and spirits and evil, good and bad. But if you go to that light, you go to a higher dimension. And I've got a corroborative story that I'd like to share. I know I'm talking a lot, but all of a sudden I got on this, and I think people might like to hear it. Especially when they listen to this podcast. Okay, I used to sell life insurance, and I enjoyed it. It seemed as though whenever I got to speak to elderly ladies that wanted to buy life insurance, they always wanted to talk to me about their deceased relatives. I mean, just it without fail. And here's a story that made me, I tied it right into Dr. Brian's theory that we go to a higher dimension that we don't have access to, but maybe they have access to, and they have access back to us. This lady, and she said, one day, it was been a while since my father died, and I'm standing in the kitchen. And I said, Daddy, I just miss you so much. I love you. I wish I could hear from you. And she said, just as clear as day, she heard the following words. Honey, don't worry. I'm just right over here. You can't see me now. But I can see you, and I'll always be with you. And I get chills to this day when I think about that. I can't release the name of the lady, but I'll tell you what. You talk about something that scared me into believing in the afterlife, it was that story. This was, again, a very practical lady. She was not prone to flights of fancy or anything. And when she said that, I said, oh, my goodness. We better be good because our deceased relatives are probably watching us. Like I would presume mine are watching me. So I want to say exactly what I was told. So that further corroborated the story because if we think about it, I'm going to get a little mathematical on you, okay? When we talk about the three dimensions, what we call them is height, width, and depth. That's how we characterize the three dimensions that we see and live in here, okay? And when we think about that, we have access to those lower dimensional worlds, those three-dimensional worlds, because we live in a higher dimensional world. So it only makes sense from basically Dr. Brian's article, from what Joe McMonagle said, and what this nice lady said to me, about her father speaking to her, is that they're in a higher plane or a higher dimension, but they can see us. And it was real funny. I was visiting with my dear friend Susie,
who lives in another town today. I'd stored some boxes in her garage, and I went to pick them up, and she knows that she and I do talk about paranormal and stuff frequently. She said, you know, I asked her, it was weird. I said, how's your mom doing? Her mom passed away about 6 months ago. And I don't know why I asked her today. I said, how's your mom doing? She said, oh, she's fine. She stays in touch. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, it was about a month ago. We were all asleep, me and the two dogs and the two cats. We were all asleep. We heard this rattling, this bang in the kitchen. And I walked in there. She has some metal letters that say fa-la-la-la-la. She's a musician and a wonderful singer. And she said one of those was on the floor several feet from the wall. But I have those things stuck into those nails so that I could barely pull them off myself. And the nails were still in. And I looked around. And I said, Mom, don't pull my stuff off the wall. I'm here and doing fine. Further corroboration that somebody from a higher dimension can do something.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll be quiet now. I've talked about the fact that I believe in higher dimensions. I believe in Dr. Brian's article, which I'm as soon as we're done tonight so that people can enjoy it along with my interpretation. And so that's what, what do you think, buddy?
Well, you know, it reminds me, you were talking and it was making me think. So I've always been a big believer in dreams and the power of dreams to open up to those other dimensions and other realms, because when you're sleeping and your body is relaxed, you're vulnerable to these other dimensions. And I have a lot of dreams about the moment of death. And just recently I had a dream where I died. You know, something happened. I don't know if I was shot or in a car wreck, but I came to some violent end. And instead of there being a light or my life flashing before me, it was as if somebody just turned off the lights. So I could still hear and sense what was happening around me, but I had no longer the ability to interact with it. I couldn't see, I couldn't be a part of it, but I was still there sensing it. And that made me think, you know, maybe that is a possibility of what happens, is that you move on to this new plane and you're kind of lost. So you have to find your way, you know, you kind of have to find your way on without a lot of the senses that you have when you're living. You know, and that could account for ghosts too, because you might have to find a new way to move to that wormhole, like you said. And, you know, along these same lines, you know, I haven't been, you know, lucky enough to have really been visited by ancestors or family members who have passed on when I'm awake. But what has always happened is after somebody has passed on, I do have a lot of intense dreams about them. And it's about how they were, you know, their natural person, not, you know, a lot of the people I know who have died were elderly, you know, my grandparents and people like that, who, you know, they were not the same person at the time that they died. And then after they died, they came back to me in dreams. And it was really very realistic dreams, like they were communicating with me and telling me that they're still here, they're still part of my life.
Let me ask you this. When you see them, do you see them in a younger form? I'll bet you do.
It's definitely younger, yes. Younger, but more more timeless, too. Like, not necessarily just younger, but more like who they were for the majority of their time, like at their prime, at their peak, or at least at the peak when I was aware of them.
Exactly. I mean, you just agreed with what I said. I mean, when I see my parents, I see them younger. And when I think about their prime, it was in their early 50s. And that's how I see them.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it's really cool that we have the same. I mean, I think we're doing nothing but describing the same phenomenon in different words.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one of my earliest memories when I was a child, you know, they would ask me, you know, when you're about 10 or 11 and they start, adults ask you questions like, what was your earliest memory? And I told my parents that one of my earliest memories was that I remember my dad and this guy that we call Grandpa White. He wasn't my grandpa. He was actually my cousin's grandpa. But we lived in a small town, so everybody kind of knew everybody. And, you know, your cousin's grandparents are kind of an extension of your family. So I said, sure. I remember my dad being with Grandpa White. And they said, well, that's not possible because he died a year before you were born. But now why would a 10-year-old come up with this story that I believed? You know, I believed that I remembered that. So, you know, I think there was some fragment or continuation of him that I did somehow sense at some point. And to me, being a young child, I didn't realize the difference between him being alive and being a spirit.
Right. I mean, and that's what happens. In fact, I was talking about this with Susie. She takes care of her best friend's granddaughter sometimes when her best friend and her best friend's daughter, when they get tied up at work or whatever, Susie will go pick up the kid and keep the kid at her house, take care of her for a couple hours. And it disturbs Susie greatly when the little kid will roll over and look up just right into space and start laughing and reaching her hand out like someone's there. I mean, because the old adage goes that, you know, kids see things that we don't. Kids see what dogs see and what cats see, and they're taught not to. And that's what I think is so sad about our culture, is that we're so stuck in believing in the five senses, you know, the three-dimensional plane and everything. And when there's a lot more, there's so many cultures out there in the world that invite the spirits of their loved ones who deceased to come into their lives and to stay there with them. A lot of the
yep.
what we would call primitive cultures, which aren't very primitive at all, you know, they certainly believe that. And I mean, I like that. I think it's natural. I think too many
yep.
scientists have said, well, you know, when you die, you're gone, the soul dissipates, boom, it's done. It doesn't work like that. Now, I have some proof. I have some articles that I've got, but it doesn't work like that. And the fact that you knew Grandpa White, that's amazing. That's a wonderful story. I bet you the more you think about it, the more you'll remember about Grandpa White.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, there are places that even the biggest skeptic, you know, like whether it's a haunted house or some sort of a outdoor, you know, sometimes it's a forest or, you know, there's places that are very much, I don't know if they're kind of, I don't know what the difference is between them and other places, but they have a very strong psychic sense to where even people who are normally skeptic can say, okay, yeah, I feel something here. You know, I feel something reverberating from somebody else or different people, you know, and I think even the biggest skeptic has been somewhere like that where they've felt that before.
Yeah, I mean, certainly they have. And I think what gives this whole world about extrasensory phenomena a bad name, folks like, of course, the Amazing Randy. Does that name ring a bell?
No.
He's a magician who has a $1 million prize, says if you can prove that ESP exists or whatever exists, I'll give you $1 million. And, of course, it wouldn't matter what you did. You could conjure up your grandmother and your grandmother could say hello. He would say, well, that didn't happen. It's not going to happen with him. And he has a book
yeah.
called Flim Flam. His book Flim Flam is about a bunch of experiences that were hoaxed and fakes. You know, that's fine. There are hoaxes and fakes everywhere. I was thinking today, I'm an event promoter. And it's funny that I thought about this. So I'm walking to my car to get some free VIP passes to the Wilmington, to Cape Fear Comic Con for them to give away tonight at some event in Myrtle Beach. And I said, you know what? As an event promoter, it is my job to make an event that I'm going to put on look as appealing as possible. And so doesn't matter, you know, there's a phrase called puffery. That's making something seem a little bit better than it really is, but that's okay. It's called advertising. It's called puffery, mm-hmm. and that's what event promoters do. And I said, you know what? It wouldn't matter. If all I ever did was tell the exact truth as we know it, I'd never be able to promote anything. I would never be able to get people to see, well, how wonderful this event could be. And it's called puffery. It's trying to put a positive spin on something. Well, you know, so everyone's going to think that because I'm a promoter, I am to a large degree a liar. But that's not the case. You know, I want to try to play up positive aspects of what can happen. And that's no different than when you say, I saw Grandpa White, and you start thinking about experiences with him that you had, you know, just seeing him move or whatever. And you're trying to promote the positive of what I would call a psychic experience. So there's no difference mm-hmm. in me promoting an event and you talking about Grandpa White. You know, there's no difference in that. It's the same exact thing.
Yeah.
People are going to think you're a liar in a way. They're going to think I'm a liar in a way. But yet we're telling the truth. We're looking
well,
at
and
the
I think
positive.
Part of it is it's such a personal thing. It's such a when you have any sort of connection with one of the other dimensions, it's really not about telling other people or proving it to other people or really even whether or not other people believe you. It's really not about that. You know what happened. You felt it. And I don't think that the person on the other end, they don't really need or want you to share that with other people. So I think it gets a little tricky when people are asked to prove it or try to prove it because that's not even the point of it, you know. And I think things can get really twisted when you try to do that.
I agree with you 100%. You know, experience what they're going to experience. Write it down. Now, one thing that I will say, and I learned a valuable lesson, when you were talking about dreams, a lot of people tell me, well, I don't really remember my dreams. What can I do? Well, there's a very simple technique. I have a copy sitting right here on my bookshelf called Edgar Casey on Dreams. Now, I believe I mentioned him another time tonight. He was the sleeping prophet from the Virginia Beach area. And he did psychic mm-hmm. readings of people. He was many, many times correct. He was also called the father of holistic medicine. He would say, go try this, 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 put it on there, and it'll get rid of it. Lo and behold, it did. And Edgar Casey has a very simple approach if you want to learn more about your dreams. You want me to tell you, Devin? It's simple.
Yeah, please do.
All right. What you do is sleep with a small light on somewhere, and beside your bed, you have a pad and a pencil or a pen. And whenever you wake up, because we all wake up through the middle of the night, right?
Mm-hmm.
For a minute or two or whatever, he said, write down what you remember, and you will magically start remembering your dreams. Now,
mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, but my dreams, you know, they're very vivid when I wake up, and then I start forgetting them. Are you that way?
Yeah, to a degree. A lot of times I do remember them for a long time. I mean, I still remember dreams I had when I was probably 6 or 7 years old. But I'm a little different than most people in that, you know, I do remember them, and I even oftentimes can have the awareness that I'm in a dream. And so to some degree, I can often control then what happens in the dream.
Well, to a certain extent, you can control it. Like you may be in a position where you're in a moat around a castle and you're swimming for your life, but you're swimming. But it's hard to kind of control, mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to control the fact that you're in that moat, maybe. I don't know. Obviously, that's a dream that I had one time. But, yeah, you know, just writing down your dreams as soon as you wake up, you keep a dream log, and you will find that you start remembering more and more about your dreams, and you don't have to keep that dream log.
Yeah.
And that's in the book Edgar Casey on Dreams, Warner Books, out of print. If you've got a copy, if you don't have it, contact me. And I think the copyrights run out, and I'll Xerox your copy as long as you'll pay for the copies and the postage. But, you know, it's a great technique to use. And sometimes simple is the best.
Yeah, and something you can do nowadays, because everybody has a phone usually next to them, if you have like a voice recorder on your phone, it might be even easier just to talk and record a little voice memo and say what happened. Because when you're groggy and tired, it might be hard to turn a light on and, you know, write down something, especially if it's a complex dream, as they often can be. So you might just, you know, turn your voice recorder on, just briefly describe the dream, and then you know, you kind of have a compilation of different, like, basically diary entries of your dreams.
That's great. And now you can tell that I read this passage in the Edgar Casey book about 35 years ago. And I remember what he said about keep a low light on in your room and wake up, write it down. I mean, and I'm as computer savvy as anybody, but I never thought about that. So that's a great tip for everybody. If you want to remember your dreams, just record, do a quick little recording, and mm-hmm. and that's a super idea. So you get an A+ on that. dragging me 35 years in the future, but that's okay. Well, I tell you what, as we're about to close, number one, it's been a pleasure. It's been fun talking with you. Now, next week, Devin, can I bring on our first guest?
Yes, I'm looking forward to that.
It is going to be Matthew Delph. He's a Bigfoot explorer, researcher. He's had a Bigfoot experience, and he's dying to come on our show. So he reminded me today. Now, John, you said you got that new host, and I want to be your first guest. I said, okay, that's great. And then tomorrow, I've got Maestro, Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, is in town. He did an event tonight. We're going to have breakfast in the morning. We're going to be on down at the barbershop. It's a syndicated radio show. We're going to be on there tomorrow, and then we're going to have lunch, and he's going to go off to reclaim a world heavyweight championship in West Virginia. Then I'll see him on Sunday at the Charlotte Comic Con. But Papa Stro said, well, I'm going to be on that show. So how about next week we'll have Matthew Delph. We'll talk about Bigfoot. And the next week we will have one of my very best friends, Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling from WCW, and he's an actor, and he's a heck of a lot of fun. Is that an okay list to get us going?
Say that as a don't miss show. So anyone listening to this, you need to tune in again next week for what's going to be an exciting show.
Yeah, and then I tell you what, then I'll let you get a show or two, and we'll just keep on, and it won't be long until we're going to have a lot of people listening to Scarycast, because I think this is a lot of fun, and I hope they enjoy this recap of how to monitor your dreams. What happened when I sold life insurance and going to the light and everything. I hope people enjoy this, and I'm glad I got to tell these stories. They're important to me, and I hope people hear them. So I guess I'll say thank you, Devin. Thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It was a blast.
Thank you, Dr. John. It was great being here.
Well, good. And so I guess we'll sign off for now, and we will come back next week. A similar bat time, but the same bat channel. How's that?
Sounds great. Have a great night, everybody.
All right, you too. And we will all talk soon right here on Scarycast.